All right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. We're going to learn Chumash again this week. So, oh, really? Is that right? Okay, it's not that you don't like the other stuff we learn. You just like Chumash. Okay, good. So, you can open up to page 286 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumashin. Now we're seemingly going to pick up right in the middle, but that's okay. That's okay. We're going to learn today, I think, what I call Yosef and the brothers Act 2, which is not really Act 2. It's really Act much more than that. But we're going to learn what happens after Yaakov Avinu dies. Again, when it's just Yosef and the brothers all by themselves. So if you look on page 286, I'll give you the background about what's happened, and then we'll learn about Yosef and the brothers. But the background is that everybody came down to Egypt. You remember that from last week's Parsha? Everybody came down to Egypt. They're living in Egypt. Yaakov dies. The brothers, Yosef and an entourage, ascend back into Eretz Canaan to bury Yaakov. And then they return back down to Egypt. That brings us to our portion right now. So like always, we'll just read through the Pesukim quickly with the Art Scroll translation first, and then we'll return to see the Pesukim with the Rishonim and the Achronim, and perhaps what it is that we can glean from these Pesukim. So if you just start, for background purposes, we're going to start our study today at Pasuk Tes Vav, at verse 15, but for background purposes, let's start at Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayasu banav lo kain kasher tzivam, and the brothers, the sons, they do to Yaakov that which Yaakov had commanded them. Vayisu oso banav arza kenan, vayikbru oso b'maras sedei ha-machpila, asher kanav rahames ha-sadeh, l'achuz ha-skever mi'eis efron achiti al-pnei mamrei, and they buried Yaakov in the cave that Avraham bought from Ephron, al-pnei mamrei. Vayashav Yosef mitzrayma, and Yosef returns back to Egypt. Hu ve'achav v'chol ha'alim ito likbor es aviv, him, his brothers, everyone who went up with him to bury his father, acharei kovro es aviv, after he, singular by the way, interesting to note, he, singular, buried his father, right? Why does Yosef get most of the credit for burying Yaakov? I know, I told you we're not going to study these psukim, but why not? We're here already. Right, simplest understanding?
He was the only one who could come and go?
It was his charge. Yaakov charged him to do it, right? I think that's the simplest understanding. But now here we go, ready? These are our psukim. Now that we have background, we know the context that we're set in. So now here we go. Everybody ready? Vayir'u achei Yosef ki meis avihem. Again, I'm just using Art Scroll right now. Joseph's brothers perceived that their father was dead. Oh, it's so good. I should really read the Art Scroll before we do this year. I feel like I do this all the time, right? I say I'm just going to use Art Scroll's interpretation, and then I read their interpretation, and I say something to the extent of, oh, I'm so happy they translated that way. Or something like, really? That's how they chose to translate it? Right? Why is this a strange translation? What does the word Vayiru mean? They saw. That's not how they translate it. Right? They perceive. Everyone sees that, right? Pun absolutely intended right there. Everyone sees it. Yeah? Right? Vayiru achei Yosef ki meis avihem, and Joseph's brothers perceived that their father was dead. Vayomru, and they said, Lu yistimenu Yosef, perhaps Yosef will nurse hatred against us. Vehashev yashiv lanu eis kol ara asher gamalnu oso, and then he will surely repay us all the evil that we did him. Vayitzavu el Yosef lemor, and so they instructed that Yosef be told, Avicha tziva lifnei moso, your father gave orders before his death, lemor, saying, Kosomru li Yosef, quote, thus shall you say to Joseph, Ana sana pesha achecha v'chatasam ki ra'a gimalucha, oh please kindly forgive the spiteful deed of your brothers and their sin, for they have done you evil. Va'ata, so now, sana lefesha avdei Elohei avicha, please forgive the spiteful deed of the servants of your father's God. Okay, another good translation. Vayef Yosef bidamram elav, and Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Vayalchu gam echav, vayiplu lifanav. His brothers themselves also went and flung themselves before him. Vayomru, and said, hinenu lecha la'avadim, we are ready to be your slaves. Vayomer aleihem Yosef, but Yosef said to them, al tira'u, fear not, ki hatachas Elohim ani. Oh, I'm sorry. I had to check how they translated before I read that. Ki atachas Elohim ani. Now I can read it the way that they translated it. Fear not, for I am instead of God. Va'atem chashavtem alai ra'a, Elohim chashava litova. Although you intended me harm, God intended it for good. Leman aso kayom hazel achayos amrad, in order to accomplish it as clear as this day, that a vast people be kept alive. Va'atos, so now, al tira'u, fear not. Anochi achalkel eschem v'yestabchem, I will sustain you and your young ones. Va'yinachem osam va'yidaber alibam, thus he comforted them and spoke to their heart. Vayeshev Yosef b'Mitzrayim hu v'esaviv, and Yosef dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household. Vayichi Yosef me'ah v'eser shanin, and Joseph lived 110 years. Now, if you just look the rest of the psukim until the end of the parsha, until the end of Sefer Bereishis, tells us about Yosef and his grandkids, all about the family of Yosef, but the brothers are gone. There's no more brothers. This is the end, which is why we will stop here. But there is a few more psukim. Yosef sees four generations of grandchildren. That's a lot of generations, by the way. From Ephraim, three from Menashe. And Yosef, before he dies, he tells the Jews what would become the cry that the Jews would hold on to, and that Moshe Rabbeinu would eventually remind them of, that Pakod Yevkod Elohim Eschem, right, that God will certainly come and redeem you. And then Yosef asks that his brothers promise that their children will bring him out of Egypt and bury him back in Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Canaan, like the brothers did, or like Yosef did for Yaakov. Okay? Everybody good? We got the storyline? Question already. Yeah, sure.
Why, after they buried Yaakov, didn't they stay or make an attempt to leave Egypt at that point and yeah, move back to Canaan?
Presumably they didn't have a choice. Presumably conditional on their being able to leave was that they would return. Presumably.
Okay.
Presumably. In fact, they leave when they go up, they leave their kids behind. Pasuk says explicitly. They don't all ascend with their families. They leave stuff behind. Yeah.
Now, related to exactly what you were reading to us, we saw the transformation in Yosef, how he matured and he became humble.
Yeah.
And he said on several times that this was a godly act, that
right,
you know, this is what God intended. So then why is it that his brothers, after years of him proving himself, did his brothers revert and fear that he was going to, at that point, take retribution?
This is a very excellent question, right? What happened here? What happened? So let's read Psukim again. Excuse me. Let's read it with the Rishonim and the Achronim, and hopefully we'll be able to answer these and many other questions. Everybody ready? Let's go back to Pasuk Tezvav. Just let me open all the books. Open all the books. There it is. There it is. We're all ready. Okay. So the Torah tells us, Vayoshav, the next Pasuk, sorry, Vayiru Achei Yosef Ki Meis Avihem, Vayomru Lu Yistameinu Yosef VeHashev Yashiv Lanu Eskol Ara Asher Gamalnu Osa. And the brothers saw that their father died. They perceived, whatever it is, right? They saw that their father had died. The Rishonim were all bothered by this, which is why I point out the Art Scroll translation as perceived. Because if you translate the Pasuk simply, the brothers saw that their father died. What did they see? What did they see? Yaakov died a little while ago, right? Yaakov died a while ago. We know that because they transported him from Egypt to the land of Canaan. They buried him. The Torah says, Vayaslo Evel Shivas Yamim, they sat for Yaakov Avinu mourning for 7 days. Some thought that this was a biblical precedent, that the mitzvah of Avelus is Midaraisa for 7 days. This is the only reference that you have in the Torah, by the way, of Avelus, I think, of Avelus for 7 days. You don't find Avelus for 7 days. I don't believe so. I have to check the Pesukim. I didn't look at it this morning, but I don't believe you find that. Right? Now we're... Just step with me for 1 second, off to the side. There are three opinions in the Rishonim, whether Avelus is a mitzvah midaraisa or Avelus is a mitzvah midarabanan. Right? The Rif quotes one opinion that Avelus all 7 days is midaraisa, and the source of such an opinion is this Avelus, that the brothers and Yosef sit for Yaakov Avinu. Vayaslo Evel Shivas Yamim, to make Evel for 7 days. There are other opinions on the totally opposite extreme, that Avelus is entirely midarabanan. All 7 days of Avelus is all midrabanan. And then there's a middle opinion that some Rishonim accept that the first day of Avelus is midaraisa, and the remaining days of Avelus are midrabanan. Anybody know how we paskin, by the way? What's the halacha? We paskin that all of Avelus is midrabanan. The Ramah paskins that the whole thing is midrabanan, all 7 days. It's a fascinating halacha, it's a fascinating sugya. Maybe one day we'll learn Avelus.
Is there anyone anywhere in the globe that doesn't do 7 days? Like some people say, there isn't any. So it's pretty well accepted.
Yeah. It's halacha and Shulchan Aruch. There's people all over the globe who don't keep Shulchan Aruch, but people who keep Shulchan Aruch keep 7 days of Avelus.
People who don't keep Shulchan Aruch.
People who don't keep Shulchan Aruch, they have to do whatever they want. I don't know. But, but the Ramah says it's only midrabanan. Okay, it's all an aside, I'm sorry. The point is that Yaakov Avinu didn't just die right now. Yaakov Avinu had died prior. So what did they see? Vayir'u achei Yosef, ki meis avihem. The brothers of Yosef saw that their father died. So some Rishonim, or some Gaonim, like Rav Sadia Gaon, right, he would have translated like Art Scroll, or rather, Art Scroll translates like Rav Sadia Gaon. It's just a figure of speech. They didn't see anything. It means that after Yaakov Avinu's death, this is what happened. They perceived that Yaakov was gone, that Yaakov was not there. In support for such an approach, you find things, you know, like Rabbi Hirsch writes here, quote, as long as children live about a father or a mother, for so long do they find in their parents a force which holds them together. Even amongst the best of children, there can be small differences, but as long as the parents are alive, all discord vanishes in the common love and attachment to them. Hopefully, I add. After the death of the parents, the bond holding the children together becomes loosened. They do not meet so frequently and become more estranged from one another, when father and mother no longer form the center point. Now here in this case, it was no more than natural. The brothers saw, they felt, that the father was no longer there. You understand, right? There was, up until this point, something that held Yosef and the brothers together. Now, let's not pretend that Yosef and the brothers had a great and loving relationship. They didn't. And Yaakov, even when they came down to Egypt now, after all of these years, Yaakov held the family together. And now that Yaakov was gone, the brothers were scared. So Rav Sadia Gaon, Rabbi Hirsch, Art Scroll, they interpret that the brothers didn't see anything specific. They felt, they perceived, they were nervous that something might happen. Nothing specific took place. But Yaakov was gone, and they lost that focal point, that thing that was holding them all together. And so they were nervous, they were afraid. If you look in others of the Rishonim, other Rishonim take the word Vayiru a little bit more literally. That they saw something. Actually something happened. Specific events that took place that made the brothers worry. It wasn't just that Yaakov is gone, but something happened. So if you look in Rashi says that when Yaakov was alive, they used to have family meals. It's a very nice thing. When Yaakov was alive, they used to have family meals. They all used to go eat Yosef by Yosef's place. They all used to come together. They would have family meals. And now that Yaakov was dead, they all came back to Egypt. The brothers saw that they didn't have these meals as often. They saw, you know, what Rabbi Hirsch writes, that they perceived, that they sensed. Rashi writes, actually happened. They saw the family beginning to split and divide. There's a fellow here in town who does not daven in our shul. It's not important who he is. There's a fellow here in town who told me that they had grandparents. They had grandparents who used to have the family over for Friday night dinner every week. It's a lot of people. Grandparents used to have the family over for Friday night dinner every week. And the grandparents are now no longer living. This fellow was telling me, grandparents are now no longer living. And he's telling me that it's so sad, not only that he no longer has his grandparents, but that the family doesn't do Friday night dinner anymore. They listen, they had people in the family who were more religious and less religious, but the whole family used to come for Friday night dinner to the grandparents. And now the grandparents are no longer living, and the family doesn't do Friday night dinner. He was telling me it was so sad. You know what I said to him? Invite the family for Friday night dinner. So he told me he does it sometimes. He doesn't do it every week. He does it sometimes. But there are people in every family that hold.
They have a core. There's a core there.
Yeah. They hold the family together.
These brothers all had different mothers. And that has to make some kind of a difference as well.
Yeah. That's probably true. It's probably true. And Yaakov was the common bond. You know, it's interesting. I feel it in my family. I hope this is not too personal. I feel it in my family. Thank God I come from a very large family, right? And from my grandmother, who thank God is still living in Queens, from my grandmother to my kids, which is the generation that we're up to, so from my grandmother to my kids, we're around 70. We're just on that side of the family, just on my mom's side of the family, right? If you start with my grandma's one and go down to my kids, meaning her great-grandkids, we're at about 70 right now. That's a lot, right? And I feel that my grandmother is the bond for all 70. She's an incredible person. I don't talk about my grandmother, but you know, she links the whole family together. We live out here in Memphis, and I have other cousins who live in California who are not my first cousins, not my siblings. They're my first cousins, and they live in California, and we have that bond. We have that bond that I feel in my family from her. She holds my family together. And I hope that every family has at least one person who unites the entire family. And the brothers here saw that unit loosening. They saw after Yaakov died, according to Rashi in a practical sense, according to Rav Sadia Gaon and Rabbi Hirsch more in a cognitive sense, they saw that family loosening. They saw that bond starting to fall apart. If you look in others of the Rishonim, though, Chizkuni, also Balaturim writes the same thing, that they saw something different. They saw something else. You want to hear this? Vayiru ache Yosef kimeis avihem. They saw when their father died. Ki, the word ki, has different meanings in different places. And they don't say this explicitly, but the way that they translate the pasuk indicates to me that they understood this word ki when. They saw something when their father died. You know what they say they saw? On their way back. They went up from Egypt to the land of Canaan. Listen to this story. On their way back down to Egypt, Chizkuni and Balaturim write that they passed by the pit that the brothers threw Yosef in. They passed by the spot, the scene of the crime, where it all started years and years before, 40 years earlier. They passed by the pit, and Yosef made a bracha. Yosef made a bracha. Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech ha'olam, she'asa li neis b'makom hazeh. Blessed is God who performed for me a miracle in this place. The Gemara in Brachas writes, it's also Halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that when a miracle happens to you, and you pass by that place again in the future, you make this bracha. You make this bracha. She'asa li neis b'makom hazeh, that a miracle happened for me in this place. It's Halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It's based on a Gemara in Brachas. Chizkuni and the Balaturim write that on their way back from Canaan, back down to Egypt, they passed that pit, and Yosef made that bracha. I was in that pit, and God saved me. He provided for me a miracle. He made that. And then the brothers got all nervous. They saw that. They saw something, an event, something that really happened. And they got all scared. They thought, ooh, maybe Yosef remembers, like he forgot. But now it's fresh, anew, brought all back to him again. And now we're in trouble. Fascinating shot that Chizkuni and Balaturim both write. Ibn Ezra says that, you know, the Pasuk says, so that's what they saw. And then they said, look at this, they said, Vayomru, Lu Yistimenu Yosef. Now, how did they translate that here? Perhaps, Lu, the word Lu, it means perhaps. And that's how almost all of the Rishonim, right, interpreted it. That the word Lu is like from the Hebrew word ulai, maybe, perhaps, right? Ibn Ezra writes this, Rashi writes this, most of the Rishonim write this. Maybe Yosef is harboring hatred against us, and now he's going to get us back. But Malbim writes such a different shot. It's a little off the wall. I had to read this like two or three times. I understood it the first time I read it, but I didn't understand it. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you know how you read something and you understand all the words, but it takes a minute for it to click in, right? Malbin writes such a wild shot. He writes that the word lu does not come from the word ulai, perhaps, maybe, but comes from the word halivai, which means if only. If only, I wish. What does that mean? The brothers then said, Lu yistimenu Yosef. I wish Yosef would harbor hatred. I had to read it a few times. You know what Malbim explains? Imagine the following scenario. Imagine you have a person, this is what Malbim says. Imagine you have a person who you do harm to. You harm a person, right? Now in your head, in all of our heads, how should that person act to me? With hostility, right? Let's imagine for a second that instead of that person being hostile, that person does you tremendous favors. How does that make you feel?
Guilty.
You know what Malbim says? The brother said, Lu yistimenu Yosef. I wish Yosef would just hate us. Because the brothers did such tremendous harm to him, and Yosef here was providing them continuously and constantly. Malbim says every piece of bread that Yosef gave the brothers, it ate them up inside. It was killing them. So that the brother said, Lu yistimenu Yosef. I wish, is this so off the wall? Right? So I wish that Yosef would just stick it to us already. You hear that? I wish that Yosef would just stick it to us already. The Hashem Yashiv Lanu is Kol Ara Asher Gamalnu also. And maybe he'll give back to us some of the badness that we gave to him. Brothers, it's very sad. You know, it's very sad. I think the Malbim's interpretation is sadder than the other Rishonim's interpretation. The other Rishonim, the brothers here, they were scared that their younger brother, or Binyamin's case, that maybe, you know, the older brother, Binyamin probably not included in this fear, but in any event, right? You hear the brothers are, they're scared that their younger brother is gonna do them harm. That's sad, right? That's sad. I think Malbim's interpretation is sadder. Here you have all these brothers, and their younger brother is just doing them favors, and they can't live with it. It's eating them from the inside out.
Nowhere, at least to my recollection, does it say that the brothers did tshuva for their actions. I mean, maybe had they done true tshuva, they would have been more accepting.
I don't know. Some suggest
goodness and kindness.
Right. Some suggest that they do tshuva by Binyamin. Meaning when Yosef wants to take Binyamin, so some suggest that they do teshuva, right? The Rambam writes that the highest level of teshuva, Rabbi Yonah writes this also, that the barometer for a real teshuva is if you're in the same place, in the same situation, and you don't do it again. So some write that with Binyamin they do teshuva. That here they were in a similar place, in a similar situation, not identical,
yeah.
Similar, and they don't do it. So it could be,
hit me in the face that they daven and they cry for Hashem,
right?
And they beg for forgiveness,
right? And you don't have it. And you don't have it.
The things that we go through.
Yeah.
You know,
hold on to that. You're gonna love what we're gonna learn in a few minutes. You're gonna love this. That's sarcastic.
The brothers were never really punished for selling Yosef, though. So they could have been waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, that could be.
They could have been waiting for a punishment. Right?
That could be. Rabbi Stein suggested to me this week. He didn't give me any sources to this. I don't think he has any. I think that he thinks that this makes sense. I haven't seen it written anywhere. Rabbi Stein suggested to me that that's why Yosef puts the brothers through the whole process. You know, that's why he accuses them of being spies, and that's why he imprisons Shimon, and that's why he wants to take Binyamin. And Rabbi Stein suggested that he wanted to give the brothers merit, if not merit in terms of God's perspective, but in terms of their own self-image, that they've gone through stuff. Not that like Yosef is up here and the brothers are down here, but that the brothers also have been elevated through this process. It makes sense. I you know, wish we had some sources, but it makes sense. That what? Yeah, that must have been terrible also. It must have been terrible too. Yep. Yeah, absolutely right. But that's what Malbim here writes. It's wild. Malbim here writes that the word lu does not come from ulai, but from halavai. I wish already. Listen, let's just get it over with. Every goodness that Yosef did for them was hurtful. Was hurtful to them. So v'hashev yashiv lanu eis kol hara asher gamalnu oso, and that Yosef would finally give us the bad that we did to him. Vayitzavu el Yosef leimor. Now this means they sent messengers to Yosef. They commanded to Yosef. Vayitzavu el Yosef. They commanded to Yosef. They sent messengers to Yosef. Who did they send? Two possibilities in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim write, they sent messengers. Who did they send? I don't know. They sent messengers. They sent people, either servants, people who would have known Yaakov. It has to be someone who knows Yaakov, right? Because what they're going to say is, right? Either servants from the house, people who knew Yaakov, or Rashi and Chizkuni write something very interesting. They send the Bnei Bilha, Yosef's brothers. Some of them go themselves. The Torah tells us way, way back in the beginning, when Yosef is a teenager, still living in his parents' house before his brothers sold him down as a slave, V'hu na'ar es b'nei bilha. Right? Yosef used to hang out with the kids of the maidservants. So they took the brothers who had the best relationship with Yosef, and they sent them as the messengers. This is Rashi writes, Chizkuni writes the same thing. It's very, very interesting. In any event, right? In any event, what did they say? They said, Avicha, this is what the messenger said. The brothers send messengers to say to Yosef, Avicha tziva lifnei moso lemor. Your father commanded us before his death, saying. Now it's interesting. Sephorno writes, before Sephorno, Rashi first. Slowly. Right? Rashi writes, this was not true. It's based on a Gemara. Rashi didn't make this up. Right? This is a lie. The Gemara says, Yaakov never said this. Right, what are the words they're about to put into Yaakov's mouth? Kosomar li Yosef, this is what you should say to Yosef. Ana sana pesha achecha, forgive your brothers. Now, Rashi writes, based on the Gemara says, Yaakov never said that. This is a lie.
The question is whether Yaakov even did.
Exactly right. But Rashi here says that this was a lie. This is what the Gemara says. They made it up. It's a fascinating concept. Rashi says that it must have been that they made it up. Rashi even says, if you look at Rashi, I'll tell you, this Rashi was difficult for me to understand. Not the lie part, the second part. If you look in the very end, if you want to read it with me, the very last Rashi on page 286, it's the last line. It says, Avicha Tziva in bold letters. So Rashi says, Shinu Badavar Mipnei, turn the page, Hashalom. Right, they lied because of peace. That's what the Gemara says. We'll get to that concept in 1 second. But now look at this next thing that Rashi says. Kilot Siva Yaakov came. Yaakov did not ever make such a command. Shelonechshad Yosef b'einav, because Yosef was not suspect in Yaakov's eyes. Now Rashi assumes a couple of things. Rashi assumes first, Yaakov knew everything. Right? In order for Yaakov to not suspect Yosef, Yaakov knew everything. Rashi assumes. Second, Rashi assumes that Yaakov thought that Yosef would never try to get the brothers back. Ki lo nechshad Yosef b'yenav. That's what Rashi says, right? This Rashi gave me trouble. Maybe somebody could help me. I don't have a good answer. I can suggest something, but I don't have a good answer, right? Rashi here writes that Yaakov didn't suspect Yosef. Anybody remember what happens in the beginning of this week's parsha? Yaakov is living in Egypt. Yaakov thinks he's going to die. So Yaakov calls in his son Yosef. And what does Yaakov ask of Yosef? A favor. To bury him in Israel. Don't bury me in Egypt, bring me to Israel. But before Yaakov asks that favor, Yaakov says something else. He prefaces his request with something way, way back in the past. What does Yaakov say? Anybody remember?
He's not happy.
Yaakov perceives that Yosef is not happy.
Right.
Why?
Because
Yaakov didn't bury Yosef's mother, Rachel, in the Ma'aras HaMechpelah. He buried her Derech Beis Lechem in Hebron, right? So Yaakov, maybe I'm reading too much into the Pesukim, but help me out here. Yaakov is nervous that Yosef is not going to want to bury Yaakov in Eretz Canaan because Yaakov did not bury Rachel in Eretz Canaan. The very same thing that Yaakov did not do for Yosef's mother, Yaakov is asking Yosef to do for him. And Yaakov, can I say the next thing? Suspects that Yosef might not do it. And yet, Rashi over here on our Psukim tells us that no, Yaakov never suspected Yosef. Yaakov knew that Yosef was such a big tzaddik and Yosef would never try to get the brothers back. Do you see what I see as incongruous here? No? Yaakov was so confident, according to Rashi, that Yosef would never try to get back at the brothers who did such tremendous harm to Yosef. And yet, Yaakov was scared and nervous. He suspected that Yosef would try to get back at him for something that he did, not to Yosef, but to Yosef's mother. Do you see what I see as incongruous?
There's a lot of guilt going on.
So what I was going to suggest is along those lines, that might make sense. In other words, that Yaakov doesn't suspect Yosef of anything. Yaakov doesn't suspect Yosef here, and Yaakov doesn't suspect Yosef there. But in the beginning of the parsha, Yaakov is the one who perceives that he may have done something wrong. And so Yaakov feels that he needs to explain himself. Yosef doesn't need an explanation. Yosef doesn't care. Oh, maybe he doesn't, whatever. Maybe Yosef understands. But Yaakov needs to explain it to him. Yeah? That's what Abby's saying. It's the best I've got.
Yeah. But also, a person can want to get back for something that someone did to someone else. But maybe
more than what they did to them. Right. That's an interesting level. I would have suggested the opposite. I'm saying I would have thought that we're more likely to try to get back at somebody else for something that they do to us, as opposed to something they do to somebody else. You could disagree. I don't know the studies. I'm sure there's psychology. I don't know. Yeah, maybe somebody can do some research. Somebody can. I'm sure there's studies. No, we have to have mental health professionals in this community who might have this information at their fingertips. All right, so maybe somebody will do some research, or maybe somebody listening will call us or email and let us know. In any event. Right? That's what Rashi writes. Now this concept that Rashi introduces, that we can be mishanem ipnei ha-shalom, that we can alter and change things because of peace, is a very interesting concept with some very interesting ramifications. The Gemara says this concept is true. And this is one of the examples that the Gemara brings, right? That the brothers here make up a lie to create peace between themselves and Yosef. I love this concept very, very much. You know, I'll give you an example. Tell me if you think this is okay or not. This is my favorite example, and I use it all the time. Everybody ready? Yeah? I come home from a day of work, and Malki says to me, "Aaron, what'd you eat today?" Now, the truth is that I left work, I drove to TCBY. I was going to say Ben and Jerry's, but it's not under the vibe. I drove to TCBY. You can eat at Ben and Jerry's. I drove to TCBY, and I had a ginormous, you know, frozen yogurt. But not only that, I also had mixed in, you know, a whole, you know, thing of Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, you know, which is fantastic and excellent candy, right? And it's very good in the TCBY too, if you wanna try, right? Go to the one by the JCC, by the way, because it's under the VOD, right? Because it's under the VOD, not the other ones in town. Yeah, in any event, right? In any event. So that's the truth. That's the truth. Now, what happens if I say to Malki, you know, I had a ginormous TCBY with a ton of Reese's Peanut Butter Cup? All right, now, I don't have to tell you what happened. Now, so I'm a smart guy. I know what's going to happen, right? So Malki asks me, you know, what did you eat? Now, if I tell the truth, I might have some not shalom, we'll say, on my hands, right? So I decide, well, I want to have shalom, of course, right? I want to have peace. So Malki asks me, what did I eat? And so what do I say? Oh, not so much. No, not so much. Well, I had some carrot sticks and some celery. You know, maybe I want to tell a little bit of truth. I had some peanut butter with it. You know, right? So that's okay? Safe? I lied. I want to maintain peace. Safe? Good?
No.
Good? That can't be. Let me give you another example. I'll give you another example. Right? My kids are not yet teenagers, but those of you with teenagers, let's imagine that your teenage child wants to go to some concert. You know, where do they have concerts these days? Not at the FedEx Forum. There's got to be some place a little sketchier than that. Whatever. What? All right, some hall. Whatever it is. You know, your kid wants to go to a concert and they say, you know, can I go to this concert? And you say no. And then it happens to be that night that your kid is going out and you ask your kid, where are you going? Now the kid is a smart kid. And they know, if I tell my parents that I'm going to this concert, right, then we're going to have, let's say, not shalom on our hands, right? So I tell my parents, I'm going to Rabbi Feigenbaum's house. Now, I know that's not a good lie, because you could easily check. I know. But let's just stay with me here for a minute, okay? I'm going to Rabbi Feigenbaum's house. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, okay, that's great. So now I have shalom, so that's okay? That's good? Yeah. So what is the difference?
Shalom between husband and wife is very different than anything else.
But this is not husband and wife.
Right, but the example that you gave.
I gave an example of husband and wife. I gave an example of parent and child.
But the first one was
right?
Okay.
The first one is good. The first one is okay. I like you. We can be good friends. Good friends. Right? No, but what are the parameters of this concept? The Gemara says, Mishanim ipnei Hashalom, I could lie. Isn't it true? And every time I lie, maybe this is not true. Sometimes I lie because I want to hurt people. You know? That's not nice. Well, that's bad news. That's bad news. Now you're in big trouble. Right? But what are the parameters? What does that mean? Mishanim ipnei Hashalom. I could lie because of peace. So what can I do? What can I not do? I mean, what's the context of peace? What does that mean? Yeah, Benita.
Well, I think God is leaving some of it up to us. It said much earlier, Pasha, about when Abraham, the very first line you learn about, Abraham, to protect himself, tells Sarah to tell the king that they're brother and sister.
That's right. That's right. Maybe. Maybe. But then he does it again. And Yitzchak does it also. It's difficult. God does it. The Gemara says that God does it. Where does God? With Abram and Sarah. God does it. Right? That's a little bit different, though. Yeah, Aaron clearly, in the Midrashic line, God doesn't tell a lie. God just leaves stuff out. You know? So let's go back to my example. Right? Malki asks me, what'd you eat today? Now, I had some carrot sticks. And I also had a ginormous yogurt with all of the candy. So mommy says, what did you eat? So I say, some carrot sticks. Now it's better, right? This is good, right?
The intent is a little different, though. The intent for you is to keep peace in the house.
Good.
The intent for the son or daughter is to kind of like really...
I'm being honest with you. I really wish that I had a good gedder, a good fence, a good line where I can draw in the sand and I can tell you this is allowed and this is not allowed. Unfortunately, I can't.
But that's not what
right. Intent is an important part of it. You know what I think the line is? I think the line is, you cannot lie to cover yourself. That's not allowed. That's not allowed. You cannot lie to cover for yourself.
To keep from hurting someone.
To keep from hurting someone, then you could lie. Then you could... I shouldn't say lie. You know, it's interesting. You know what? You know what? There's a machlokes. There's a machlokes how to understand this sugya. I wasn't planning on going so much into this. But there's a machlokes how to understand this concept. What is it? When we say you're allowed to lie because of peace, why is that true? So there's a machlokes. Some Rishonim and Achronim understood that what happens is I have a clash between two very important concepts. Peace and truth. There's a clash. There's a fight. And I have to decide which of those two concepts that I'm going to pick. Right? And the Gemara tells us that you can pick truth in some instances over you can pick peace in some instances, sorry, over truth. And as a result of that, if you take that approach, there are Rishonim and Achronim who write that in some instances, you have to choose truth over peace. They also write that to the extent that you can, you have to minimize the lie that you tell. In other words, even when you're allowed a lie, you have to minimize that lie. Because there's a clash. And just because I choose peace doesn't mean that I should totally abandon truth. Right? There are other Rishonim and Achronim, though, who understood very differently. They understood fundamentally that the Gemara is redefining the meaning of truth and falsehood. That when I tell a lie for peace, that's not what we would call sheker. That's not falsehood. It's truth. Do you understand what I'm saying? It didn't happen. Factually, it didn't happen. But if you're asking me what is the truth is what I'm saying, not what really happened. Because truth, they say, does not mean the events that actually took place. Truth means... I don't know how to define it. Truth means, you know, that which you're using to accomplish shalom. That which you're using to accomplish peace. Now, if you accept that second mode of interpretation, then I don't need to minimize the lie that I tell. You understand? There are practical differences between these two approaches. I don't need to minimize the lie that I tell. Because there's no clash. There's no fight. Right? That which I say to maintain the peace is the emes. It is the truth. That's a fascinating concept, right? By the way, that second interpretation also assumes that the problem with lying is that I harm the other person. So that if I'm not harming you, I'm helping you, it's not lying, right? The first interpretation can also make room for harm that it does me when I lie. You see, I lie, I'm trying to help you. But at the same time, it could be bad for me because there's a clash. And I'm neglecting the side of truth when I choose peace. And that's hurtful for me. It's bad for me. The second mode of interpretation doesn't perceive it that way because I'm not neglecting anything. Does everybody understand? All right, this is real lumdus. We've gone too far astray.
Why did the brothers feel the need to lie?
Why did they feel to maintain peace? The Gemara says they thought that Yosef was going to get them.
Yeah, but they didn't.
They thought they were in trouble. They thought they were in trouble. Listen, if we really want to go to extremes, Yosef could have killed them, which is probably what happens with Avraham Avinu, by the way. Avraham Avinu most probably, of course, certainly according to some, most probably felt his life was in danger going into Egypt or going into the kingdom of Avimelech. You know, so that most probably along those lines. And it could be, if we want to go to extreme, that's here what the brothers thought. Sephorno was very sensitive here. You know, it's interesting. The brothers are about to say to Yosef, right, that Yaakov told us to tell you not to harm us, which means that Yaakov suspected Yosef. Now, Rashi already told us that this was a lie and it never happened. But Sephorno says, what were the brothers thinking? They're going to go to Yosef and they're going to say to him, your father thinks you're a bad guy and you're going to get back at us. Right? So Sephorno says, no, that's not what they said. They said to Yosef that Yaakov said to us, If we are nervous, you see the hoops here? Yaakov said to us, if we are nervous, Yaakov didn't suspect you at all. But if we are nervous that you're going to try to get us, then we should tell you that he said, don't do it. That's what Sepharno says, the brothers said to Yosef. Right? Now look at the pasuk that they actually say. Kosom ruli Yosef. This is what you should say to Yosef. This is the messengers, right? They send the messenger. This is what you should say to Yosef. Ana, please. Sana pesha achecha v'chata sam ki ra'a gimalucha. Right? The art scroll translation. Kindly forgive the spiteful deed of your brothers and their sin, for they have done you evil. And now look. Va'ata. And now. See, so most of the Rishonim understood that this now changes. When it says Va'ata, and now, it's no longer the speech of Yaakov. Now it's the speech of the messengers, or the brothers. Meaning there are two different sentences here, right? If you look even in the art scroll translation, I'm happy that they did this one, they ended quotation marks. You see that? End quote. Because they accepted the interpretation of most Rishonim and Achronim, unlike the interpretation of Malbim. But most Rishonim and Achronim understood that the words that they put into Yaakov Avinu's mouth are, Ana sana pesha achecha v'chatasam ki ra'agim alucha. Forgive the spiteful deed of your brothers and their sin, for they have done you evil. End quote. That's all Yaakov said. And now the messengers, or the brothers, they say, Va'ata, and now, Sana lefesha avdei Elohei avicha, that you should forgive the spiteful deed of the servants of the God of your father. And then Yosef cried. Vayik Yosef et Avraham Yod. And Yosef cried when they spoke to them. So according to most Rishonim and Achronim, we have here two different statements. One from Yaakov Avinu, presumably, and one from the messengers or the brothers. And Rabbi Hirsch writes that if you look very carefully, you perceive significant differences between the words that they put into Yaakov Avinu's mouth and the words that they themselves say. Look at the pasuk very carefully, right? First, Yaakov speaks of two different types of sin. You see that? Ana sana pesha achecha v'chatasam. But if you look at the second part of the pasuk, in their own speech, va'ata sana lepesha avdei Elohei avicha. No mention of chet. No mention of chet. Right? So Rabbi Hirsch explains, and I'll tell you again, this is a very Malbim-esque comment. Right? Malbim often will tell us what the similar words, that they mean different things, and he'll do that again here, and I'll tell you Malbim's interpretation in a minute. But Rabbi Hirsch explains that Pesha is an attack. It's a sin which is an attack. You do it willingly, on purpose. It's an attack sin. What?
Premeditated,
yeah. It's an attacking type of sin. Chata'a, a sin, right, is, it may be rash, you may have done it hastily, but it's not premeditated, it's not malicious, like a pesha is. So Yaakov gives the brothers some credit. Yaakov says, forgive the pesha and the chata'a. Yaakov, in his speech, he says, forgive the pesha, the part of the sin that may have been malicious, but recognize that also some of it was chata. Some of it was not malicious, not premeditated. But when the brothers talk, they only speak of pesha. They don't give themselves any credit. The brothers speak of themselves worse than they have Yaakov Avinu speak about them. Difference number one. Difference number two, Yaakov Avinu says, sana pesha. The brothers say, sana li pesha. It's a one letter difference. Rabbi Hirsch saw a world of a difference between the two. Rabbi Hirsch says that Yaakov Avinu said, sana pesha. Forgive the entirety of it. As if it never happened. Yaakov says to Yosef, as if it never happened. The whole sin, forget the whole event and the whole thing. The brothers don't say that. The brothers say, sana lifesha. Forgive the results of the sin. We're still guilty. We did it. It's terrible. But let's let go of the repercussions, the ramifications, that which would come out of the sin. Don't pretend it didn't happen. We did it. It's terrible. Right? Here already, if you accept this approach, right, then Benita, you see a sense of remorse that the brothers may have had for that which they did. Another difference, Rabbi Hirsch points out, when Yaakov speaks of the brothers, what does he call them? Son Napesha, Achecha, your brothers. But when the brothers speak of themselves, what do they call themselves? Avdei Elohei Avicha, the servants of the God of your father. While Yaakov may have looked at the family as brothers, the brothers seem to indicate that they have forfeited the right of brotherly support. In their words, they're asking Yosef to forgive their sin because they are Avdei Elohei Avicha. Recognize that we come from we are servants of the God of your father, and not a family connection, which Rabbi Hirsch suggests they may be admitting that they have forfeited any rights to, but a more spiritual connection. We serve the same purpose. In Rabbi Hirsch's language, we are fellows of the same covenant. There's still something that links us and binds us together. Rashi writes something a little bit similar. Rashi writes, Im avicha meis elokav kayam. If Yaakov Avinu, our father, is dead, but his God is not. So there is still a link, something that binds us together. That's what Rabbi Hirsch writes, differences in the two forms of speech. Malbim interpreted differently than all the other Rishonim and Achronim, and Malbim perceived that there were not two different speeches here. It's just one speech. This is all in Yaakov Avinu's mouth. The whole thing comes from Yaakov Avinu. This Malbim, by the way, is very difficult for me to understand, and I'll explain to you very clearly why. Malbim writes the following. It's all Yaakov talking. And Yaakov says, forgive the pesha, the sin that's intentional, and also forgive the chata'a, the unintentional part of the sin. Malbim writes, what was the intentional part and what was the unintentional part? Malbim says, you have to understand why the brothers sold Yosef in the first place.
So
Malbim suggests, interesting, Malbim suggests not that way. Malbim suggests something almost opposite. Well, not almost opposite, no, just different. Malbim says that the brothers did the following analysis, right? Avraham Avinu had two kids. What did he do? Well, he had more than that, but two kids at first, right? Excluding the Bnei Keturah. And what did he do? He sent one away. Yitzchak Avinu had two kids, and what did he do? He sent one away. Here you have the brothers going up, and Yosef is telling Yaakov Avinu bad stuff about all the brothers. You know what the brothers thought Yosef was trying to do? Get them kicked out. This is what Malbim says. The brothers had an analysis. They didn't just sell Yosef because they hated him. The brothers thought that Yosef was out to get them. And he was trying to have Yaakov Avinu send them away and keep Yosef there. So the halacha is, if you see somebody trying to harm you, you may be allowed to harm them first. And so Malbim says they had an analysis now. Malbim says they still should have sold their brother. That's cold.
Rodev,
that's what Malbim says. Exactly right.
Rodev have a gun and a weapon.
Okay. We have like 5 minutes. Let's not get bogged down with details. It's a fair point, right? But this is what Malbim says, right? This is the analysis that he says. So he says, that's cold. Sell a brother, that's cold. Malbim says, that's pesha. To be able to sell a brother and not have mercy and compassion and not, you know, find other ways to work it out, that's pesha. That's intentional, that's malicious. But there was also chata. There was rationale. There was cause. There was reason. So Yaakov Avinu says, recognize and forgive the whole process. The pesha along with the chata. But now, listen to this, but now, va'ata. But now, you see where the pasuk switches. Where all of the other Rishonim and Achronim perceived there was a new speaker, Malbim perceives the same speaker, but a new line of reasoning. That was before. But now, va'ata. Now what? Now that we see how it all turned out, now that we see how you became this this prominent figure in Egyptian society, and we see that God had intended all of these events to take place. Now that we see that, we see that the brothers were in reality Avdei Elohei Avicha. They were in reality just servants of the God of your father. They were in reality, and this is where Malbim gets very, very tricky for me. Malbim takes this to an extreme. He says they were in reality not acting of their own free will. That is an extreme that I am not comfortable with, but it's what Malbim says. They were in reality not acting of their own free will, and the greatness of the Pesha, the greatness and severity of the sin goes to prove it, that they were not acting of their own free will. That's what Malbim says. Meaning the fact that they were able to sell their brother, who does that? Who does that?
If they weren't acting on their own free will, they shouldn't get punished for it.
That's exactly what he's saying. It's exactly what he's saying.
It's all part of the prophecy.
It's precisely what he's saying.
Well, what they were saving. He was going to save them with the food.
Yes, you're right. You're right. But Malbim takes it to such an extreme that I am not comfortable with. That's what he says. Right. What Malbim says is the severity of the sin is so great that proves that they were not acting of their own free will. Because who does that? Who sells their own brother into slavery? Who does that? Must be that they were not acting of their own free will. That's, I don't know. You pick up the newspaper almost every day. Who does that? I'll tell you who does that. You know? Okay, I understand. It's not the brothers. I understand. I'm comparing, maybe apples and oranges. It's a good point that you're making. But this concept that Malbim here has, that to a certain extent there are times in life where you are forced into action that is not of your own free will, I don't know what to tell you. It's not only Malbim, by the way. I'll tell you, it's not only Malbim. If you look in Rashbam in the next pasuk, Yosef responds, or two pasukim later, whatever. Yosef responds and he says to the brothers, "You thought it was bad, Velohim chashva letova, and God thought it was good." And Rashbam says that Yosef says to the brothers, "Hashem goram lochem, God caused you to do it." Va'atem lo pashatem bi, and you didn't harm me at all. Now, I don't know if Rashbam is going to the extreme that Malbim is going to, but it sounds like it. It sounds like it. This is an extreme. I tried to water it down, meaning as I read it, I tried to figure out that Malbim wasn't really saying what he was saying. That Malbim wasn't really saying that they didn't act out of free will, but it's what he says.
That it was a good thing
does not mean that you didn't have free will to do it. I'll give you an example. The Rambam, right, in his Hakdama to Pirkei Avos, in the Shmona Prakim, the Rambam asks the following question. Is everybody ready? Mm-hmm. How does God punish the Egyptians for enslaving the Jews? That's not fair. God said to Avram Avinu, Ki geri yezarecha bi'eretz lo lahem va'avadun v'inu osam arbama oshana, that your children will be enslaved for 400 years. God promised Avraham Avinu that was going to happen. So how does God punish the Egyptians?
Because they went beyond.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's good. Rambam answers something different, which is, I guess, why I'm uncomfortable with this Malbim. Because many years, I've been indoctrinated into this theory of Rambam. And Rambam says that Paro didn't have to do it.
Right.
God promised Avraham Avinu that it was going to happen. And God gave Paro an opportunity. And Paro had a choice. Do it or don't do it. Paro failed the test. He did it. And Paro therefore can get punished. What happens if Paro would have passed the test and not done it?
Somebody else
would have happened. I don't know what would have happened. I don't know. God's promise would have come true, but Paro still had free choice. Right? So, I could say the same thing here. I would like to say the same thing here. Yosef had to end up in Egypt. It had to happen that way. Or wherever Yosef had to end up. It had to happen that way. But that doesn't mean that the brothers had to sell him. right? I don't know what would have happened. I don't know what would have happened. Something would have happened. But that's not what Malbim says. Malbim says, I'll read you some of his language. Mivuar, it becomes clear. Shekol ze lohaya inyan bichiri. This whole matter was not a matter of choice. Rak shahayu muchrachim b'maase ze al yedei ha'ashkacha ha'elyona. They were forced in this regard by God's divine providence. It's so clear. I tried to read out of it. I did. I tried to read out of it, but I can't. Maybe somebody can find me something, or somebody maybe listening can send us some materials. This is an extreme approach that Malbim takes. Maybe we just have to be more comfortable with it. I don't know. I'm not. But this is an extreme approach. Malbim says that there are times in life, maybe I'm expanding it. Malbim says that there was one point in time, maybe, I don't know, where the brothers acted not by their own free will. God forced them to do it. Wow. Wow. Well, but that's what Malbim meant.
What?
As a
punishment for something else.
I don't know. Meaning God took away their free will as a punishment for something else that they did. I don't know.
Then how come we don't say the opposite? Somebody did something good in the Torah. Or, you know, why should
this is a dangerous concept. You're right. This is a dangerous concept. I don't know. But this is what Malbim says. This is concept. All right, 1 second. Let's try to finish quickly. Let's see. So Yosef cries, right? And then the brothers approach in the next pasuk. The brothers approach and they fall on their faces and they say to Yosef, "Here, we're going to be servants to you." So the Bechor Shur writes in his interpretation that that once Yosef cried, the brothers now thought it was safe. Now they send messengers as first. Yosef starts to cry. They see that, so now they approach. And Yosef says to the brothers, right? He says to them, "Hataches Elohim ani." So Rashi reads it like that it's a question, right? Am I in the place of God? What do you think? Yosef says, according to Rashi, what do you think? You think I could harm you if I wanted to? This is Musar. According to Rashi, Yosef gives them Musar. Yosef says, you think I could harm you if I wanted to? Think about you guys. You guys thought that you were doing me tremendous harm. And what happened? I'm the king. You think I could harm you? Hatachas Elohim ani, I'm in the place of God. I couldn't do you harm if I wanted to. Yosef says, you guys don't get it. This is what Rashi says, that Yosef says to the brothers. Well, you guys don't get it? You still don't see it? It's not in my hands. What are you so nervous of and afraid of? If I wanted to do you harm and God didn't want you to be harmed, I'll do whatever I want and it won't make a difference. Rashi says that Yosef is giving the brothers Musar. Jerry, don't look so confused. In around a half hour from now, you're going to tell me the same thing.
No. You're... But if I do something... And it doesn't matter what it's reverse.
Listen, what Rashi says, Yosef says to the brothers, is Atachas Elohim ani. What am I in the place of God? Let's say I want to do you harm. Right. So I decide I want to go smash your windshield.
Right?
So I'm going to take a baseball bat and I'm going to smash your windshield. Now, if God doesn't want your windshield to get smashed, one of a few things is going to happen.
Right.
Either I'm going to try and not be successful in smashing your windshield, or your windshield is going to get smashed, and then you'll see why that was really a tremendous good and not harm for you. That's what Rashi says that Yosef says to the brothers. Atachas Elohim ani, you think I'm going to do you harm, or you think that I'm God? I can't do anything.
But it's the same thing as saying to the brothers, you think you did me a disservice? God did me. Whatever you think
right.
You did, God did it.
Yes, exactly right. I think you're right. That's in the next pasuk, Yosef almost says that explicitly. Right? Va'atem chashavtem alai ra'ah, you thought to do me harm. Elohim chashav alatova, and God made it good. It's almost explicit that that's what Yosef says. I'm sorry, I'm running, but I want to get a few more of these out, and it's getting late. Rav Sajagon read this pasuk not as a question, not hatachas Elohim, not as a question. Now, am I in the place of God? Right? But hatachas Elohim ani, how could I do you harm? I fear God. You see what Rav Sajagon says? Even if I want to do you harm. But how could I? How could I? How could I do you bad? I might want to do you bad. You might deserve bad. But who am I to do you harm? Am I God that I can decide that you deserve harm? Yosef says to the brothers. It's not a question. It's a statement. Hatachas Elohim ani. I fear God. I'm not going to do you any harm. I'm not going to do you any harm, right? Sephorno writes something a little bit different. Sephorno writes that what Yosef says to the brothers is Hatachas Elohim ani. Am I in God's place that I can judge? That I can judge why you did it and what happens? That's not my business. Not my business. That's God's business. God will take care of you. I don't have to worry about it. What I have to be concerned about are the events that happen. You sold me and look what happened. It worked out okay. That's what I'm concerned with. Should you have sold me? Do you deserve punishment for serving me, for selling me? Not my business, Sephorno says. Atakas Elohim Adi, what am I? That's God's role. It's not my place to give you punishment or anything like that. It's how Sephorno interprets. A fascinating interpretation, by the way. I don't know that many people think like that. We often think that we're the judge, you know?
Well, yeah. Christians always say judge not, but I don't think it's a Jewish thing.
I don't know. This is what Sephorno here says, that Yosef says to the brothers, it's not my place. It's not my place to judge you. It's not my place. Well, listen, you know, we assume the Mishnah Nagos tells us that we have to be done as kol adam l'kav schus, right? You always have to look at everybody favorably, except to the extent that it might harm you, right? If it might harm you, so then you don't have to, you know, you don't have to go into business with somebody who you know is a crook. You know, you don't have to, it's not a good idea. You don't have to harm yourself because of it. But okay, well, whatever it is. Rabbi Hirschi writes something very interesting. I know I'm wrapping it up. Rabbi Hirschi, something here writes, you ready? God can judge the thoughts, the intentions. I, as a human being, have only to think of the result. And in that, it is rather that I owe you deep gratitude. Yosef says to the brothers. That's a fantastic statement. There Rabbi Hirsch says, I don't deal with emotions and thoughts. That's God's realm. But what happened? You did me a big favor. That's wild. But that's what Rabbi Hirsch says. And that's also in line with Sephorno's interpretation. Very, very good. All right, anything else here that's very, very important? Oh, okay, good. If you look at the next pasuk, so Yosef says, I'm skipping stuff, but I just want to throw a couple more important ones out. Va'atem chashavatem alai ra'ah, you thought for me bad. Elohim chashavah letovah, God thought it was good. Leman aso kayom hazeh lachayos amrav. So that we can, as of today, see, look, I'm saving all of these people. Malbim writes something very, very interesting. That Yosef perceived that God did this to him, not so that Yosef could be the king, but l'hachayos amrav, so that Yosef could save all of them. So Malbim says, if God did this so that I could save all of you, how could I do you harm? That's what Malbim understands that Yosef meant at first. Hatachas Elohim ani? What, do you think that I can change God's plans? It's so clear that God wants me to help you, not hurt you. I might want to hurt you, I don't know. But it's so evident and so clear that I'm supposed to take care of you. So, I can't. It's l'chayos amrav, I'm supposed to save you. God gives us things so that we can help and save others. You see what Yosef says? God gave me all of this stuff. Why did he give me all of this stuff? It's so clear to me, Yosef says, that God gave me all of this stuff not to hoard it and not to hurt you, but to help you. That's what Yosef says. So if I use my power and position and prominence now to hurt you, I am undermining God. Atachas Elohim ani, I can undermine God like that. Yosef says to the brothers, last one that I'm going to share with you. The Torah says that Yosef, vayinachem osam, he comforted them. Rabbi Hirsch writes that the word nachem, it means two things in the Torah. It either means comfort, or it means to regret. Like God says before the Mabul, Vayinachem Hashem. God regrets that he made man. Right? It means to comfort or to regret. What do those two words have to do with each other? To comfort and to regret. Rabbi Hirsch says what they have to do with each other is that they both represent an entire opposite of view. An entire changing of your point of view. When you're comforted, Rabbi Hirsch says real comfort is not when you say, this happened, and I have to live with it. I'm okay, because I know I have to live. That's not real comfort. Real comfort is when you see what happened, and then you realize that it was not bad. It was good. That's comfort, an entire opposite. Rabbi Hirsch says it's just like regret. In order to regret something, you have to have at first thought that it was good or bad, either way. And now you regret it. You entirely turn. Something that you originally thought, you entirely turn your point of view, and you now see it in an entirely opposite way. You can regret that such a thing happened. I thought it was great, and now I regret it. Now I see that it's terrible. Comfort's supposed to be the same way. Comfort is supposed to be the same way. That originally I thought this was bad, and not now I'm okay with it. Not now I can deal with it. But now I see that it's good. Now I see it's for the best. That's comfort. An entirely new opposite and different perspective. I pray that we merit strong family units, bonded together by love, purpose, and mission. But should those bonds begin to loosen, Should we feel ourselves moving astray? Should we find trouble? And should we lack support? I pray that Hashem give us the strength and the bitachon of Yosef to know that all comes from Hashem, and that for it is, and that all that happens is for our betterment. And then I pray that not only that we know that it all comes for our betterment, but that like Yosef, we are capable of seeing how everything is for our betterment, so that we can grow stronger in our belief and praise of Hashem, so that we become people, as David HaMelech writes in the book of Tehillim, who are avarachas, Hashem becholeis, tamit tehila so befi. We can praise God in all of our times, that God's praise should always be in our mouths. Thank you very much for coming, and everybody have a great day.